All right. Hello and welcome back to the State of Startups. I'm your host, Matt Gabry, and this is episode 28. Haven't given it a title yet. I will when it's published, but yes, so I'm finally back after kind of a hiatus. Don't really know why. Just got caught up in other things. I just looked. My last episode was June 20th. So, yeah, took some time off and I just want to get back into it. I was looking back at the last episode and it was, I titled it, so Progress Studies for Young Scholars. And actually I am in the adult course now. I signed up for it. Yeah, some of you guys should, take an interest in it, because he might have, future courses later on, but yeah, it was $1,200, but I think it's gonna be well worth it. We're gonna be in week two. It's on Sunday nights, and it's just a speaker series on a different number of topics. And so the whole idea is to talk about scientific and technological progress and making progress in the world of atoms instead of just bits. And it's just right up my alley. So I didn't want to miss out on it because it's really cool. It's a good about 11 of us. And the host is, Jason Crawford. And follow him on Twitter. Look him up. And, everything he puts out is pretty good. So I just really like this stuff. And, in other news, we're still trying to get that UX job going. I do have an internship now, working kind of on an ed tech platform, so that's pretty exciting. So yeah, just kind of busy with that and my other day job. But nonetheless, I want to come back and keep giving you guys some good information. I should have done this a long time ago, I know, but I want to revisit the first topic here, something that happened, a few months ago. Most of you probably already know, but it's the GPT-3 big breakthrough at OpenAI. And so they've already got a Wikipedia page all about it, so I'm going to just read a little bit about what it is if you guys aren't familiar. So GPT-3 stands for the Generative Pre-trained Transformer 3. GPT-3 is an autoregressive language model that uses deep learning to produce human-like text. It is the third generation language prediction model in the GPT-N series created by OpenAI. So its full version has a capacity of 175 billion machine learning parameters. It was introduced in May, back in May of this year, 2020, beta testing as of July, 2020. It's a part of, a trend in the natural language processing systems of pre-trained language representations. So prior to this release, the largest language model was Microsoft's Turing NLG, produced back in February, and that had 17 billion parameters, or less than 10% compared to GPT-3. So yeah, this one was, 175 billion compared to the predecessor was 17 billion. So wow, pretty interesting stuff. So keep an eye on this. And I know I haven't dug that deep into it, but I know that like people on Twitter were playing around with it and it was pretty interesting. Like you would just kind of like feed it questions and it would answer it, like answer these questions, like really specifically, like very good and very fast too. So, this stuff is going to keep going. Okay, so the Wikipedia page already, I was just looking on Twitter. So Sam Altman, here, I'll just read it from the Wikipedia. So Microsoft announced on September 22nd that it had licensed the exclusive use of GPT-3 And so others can still use the public API to receive output, but only Microsoft has control of the source code. So that's interesting because I thought, you know, being OpenAI, there wasn't going to be any one corporation in control of it, but I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing because maybe it can accelerate faster. You know, Microsoft has the the talent, the money to, you know, because that's what we want is progress with it. So, yeah, interesting. We'll keep revisiting that, I'm sure, later on. Cause that's a pretty big AI breakthrough that happened. So, speaking of Sam Altman, I wanted to read some of his recent tweets, specifically on back in August, August 24th, he had this really good thread called the Vector Theory of Impact. And let me just pretty much read it, as is. I mean, you guys can read, but, you know, I'll just, go ahead and do it. So the first part is, the expected value of your impact on the world is like a vector. It is defined by two things, direction and magnitude. That's it. Direction is what you choose to work on. Almost no one spends enough time thinking about this. A useful framework for this is to think on a long but not too long time scale. 10 to 20 years seems to work. To think about where the world is going to go if current exponentials continue on, which is harder to do than it sounds like it should be, to think about what you're genuinely interested in and to think about what you can do better than anyone else. Next part is someone will almost likely always be better than you at any one thing. The easiest way to do something no one else can is to be the 95th percentile at several skills and to do something at their intersection. You can also have to learn to trust yourself when people don't see what you see. And that's interesting. The next part is magnitude is how hard you push in your chosen direction. Most people don't push nearly hard enough. They give up too quickly or care too much about what other people think or don't work hard enough, something like that. Pushing hard is often uncomfortable, but it is how things get moved. Developing an early and strong sense of self-belief, but not too strong that you don't adapt to feedback and get new data. So it's critical to this. Getting people to join you in your quest and inspiring them to outperform is usually critical. Most really important things can only be done by teams. The easiest way to push hard over a long period of time seems to be to really care a lot about the work itself and the outcome you're striving towards. I find it liberating that you only have to get two big things right. So that's it. And yes, so read through that yourself. I want to keep revisiting this often because, yeah, this is like, I know Naval has talked about this. I think James Clear has too. It's judgment and like intuition is probably the most important skill to have. And that's being very decisive about what you choose to work on. And once you think you have it, then the magnitude comes in. Then you work insanely hard in that direction. You know, most people basically, most people work really hard. And that's good, but they kind of work hard on the wrong things. So having that judgment and intuition skill is very critical. So. Okay, moving on to, I guess I really would want to talk about, something in recent week that I am really getting very passionate about is kind of the future of transportation. So Yeah, recently I've been opening up the It's Time to Build essay by Mark Andreessen. So I open that like every morning for inspiration, and I just love it. I still do, you know, and I try to pick, you know, so thinking about the judgment intuition, because I'm kind of at a point where I'm kind of free to choose what I want to work on. I'm not beholden to really anyone or anything yet right now. So I scour that essay. I've analyzed it so many times. And I think what really fascinates me is the transportation aspect of it. There's kind of like four main big categories. And that's like healthcare, education, energy, I'll say transportation and housing. So 4 to 5 big sectors, big main categories. And when I just analyze that essay and just keep going over it, what could I do? Where could I spend my time and my energy? The others are it's just still insanely hard because of the bureaucratic limitations. You know, housing is an infrastructure government problem. So is healthcare. Education is hard too. But education, you know, Lambda School, which I attended, is something that kind of came out of nowhere, came from a tech entrepreneur, and it's working. So, but I don't necessarily know if I want to be, involved in the next, you know, maybe great startup. So something that's less regulated is, I think, transportation. Now, I know the Department of Transportation, yes, you might have to, but I think there are a lot less players in that game, a lot less competition, and less bureaucratic hurdles to jump over. So, and also, if you read through the examples, you know, he's like, where are the soaring monorails, the millions of delivery drones, the supersonic aircrafts, and yes, the flying cars? You know, he says, that to me is like the coolest futuristic stuff to be working on. So that's really the main draw too. So I've been thinking a lot about really zooming out, and what's mobility? What is the future of mobility? Moving something or someone from point A to point B. And it could take a number of different avenues. Like it doesn't have to be a car. It doesn't have to be a plane, a train. It doesn't have to be something that already exists. We could start from square one. And it got me thinking, I forgot kind of about these hyperloops. That are coming to, you know, Elon Musk announced, like, I think back in 2012. So they've got one, like a joint partnership, I think, with like SpaceX and Tesla is the Hyperloop company. And also Virgin has one. Virgin is the Hyperloop One, I think. And then I found another one that I didn't know existed, but it's called Hyperloop Transportation Technologies, Hyperloop TT. And they were actually founded in 2013, so kind of a long time ago, but not too long ago. So, yeah, I just got really fascinated about this and wanted to share it with you. And because, yeah, I mean, I looked into, like, you know, Uber is planning their Uber Elevate program, I think in like 2024-ish. And that's going to be like a helicopter kind of, you know, variation on a helicopter, which, yes, I think that's going to be awesome. I can't wait for that. But so Uber is going to play that game. You can't really compete with Uber probably. So what else is there? And I think, so I started looking at logistics, I like shipping. So Hyperloop, yeah, it's fun to think about your own personal travel. Can I get to, Chicago in 30 minutes instead of 2 hours? So yeah, there will be that, but a bigger problem to solve is shipping. You know, I work at a retail store right now, and, trucks are, you know, we have to use trucks to deliver the product. Like, it's like four times a week, and it's kind of insane, you know. And then you think about Amazon and Walmart. All of these companies are just, so many trucks are on the highways all the time. And I thought about, well, what if, you know, this Hyperloop, reinventing like the highway system. What if these Hyperloops are kind of maybe built above the highway? So, you know, 10, probably 20 years out, we're going to have a highway system 2.0. And so above all the major interstate highways, we have Hyperloops that are above. And then, you know, things are going, you know, you kind of just, you might still be driving on the highway, and above you is a big Hyperloop that will go the whole way too. And things are going, you know, I guess the top speed can be like 760 miles an hour. So fascinating. So what does that mean? I mean, could that work? Well, I'm trying to find out, and I hopefully we'll get in there and see what they say about that. But yeah, I think that's really fascinating. I think it, you know, a lot of these things are ripe for really a 0-to-1 innovation. And you know, I think maybe seriously, this could be like Henry Ford and the Model T, you know, going from the horse and buggy to the first internal combustion car. That was a 0-to-1 innovation, you know, to transport something from point A to point B, you know. Because if you remember that famous quote from Ford, he said, well, if I would have asked people what they wanted, they would have just told me that they needed faster horses or more horses. And then, you know, so like that's not 0-to-1. And Henry Ford was the genius, business savvy genius that he was, the inventor. He's like, no, I mean, we got to come up with something totally different. So along the lines of a Hyperloop, I know there's also talk about self-driving trucks, because, you know, self-driving cars. And so that might still be a thing too, but I'm kind of seeing and weighing the options of which one's going to win. Maybe we'll have both. It might have a hybrid system, but I tend to think that this Hyperloop technology would be even better than self-driving trucks. Because we're kind of, I think we're not only, we're doing it to combat climate change for first and foremost. We got to get these trucks and cars and off the road, because we got to fight climate change. And this is the big way to do it, because all these Hyperloops are zero emission. So, you know, do we want, so the big other thing to fight is traffic congestion. And if we just replace every truck and truck driver with a self-driving truck, well, we're not solving that problem then, you know. And the Hyperloop, I think, really can solve that problem. So, yeah, this is a very interesting space that I'm really thinking about a lot now. And not just, again, like, you know, think about it from a logistics standpoint. You know, if you could save Amazon, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars per year, you know, would, you know, this is something that they might really consider, them and then Walmart, other big box retailers. So, yeah, just a fascinating space to pay attention to. Actually, I was going to end on that, but I forgot about my YouTube channel Seeker that I've referenced plenty of times. They came out recently this week with the quantum internet video, and this was also something I was really fascinated about. I don't know if I've talked about it before, but along the lines of, like, so quantum computing, eventually we might have a quantum internet. So back, I don't know, so the University of Chicago, and then they, like, the Argonne National Lab in Chicago, they're really leading this research, and, like, the number one in the country for this research. So that's really fascinating, because, again, that's close to home for me. So I pay attention to it a lot. So, you know, it's fascinating because it makes me think about, well, are we getting close to that dot-com era? You know, speaking of Amazon, I mean, again, they were the big business, the biggest business built on the internet, you know, the retail store from the internet. So, but when I'm researching about the quantum internet, it doesn't really, we're not really sure, like, the a lot of the business applications that could be built on it. The only one that they're talking about that comes to mind is like an unhackable internet, because quantum is something that is so secure, like it's unhackable. So it's probably going to be like a very, you know, security type company, like a Palantir. It comes to mind. So still very fascinating. I mean, you guys might look into that space, and you know, you could be the true pioneers to get that, to be those next Palantir guys. So look into that. I will post all these links in the description below. So yeah, I wanted to throw that in there. I think that's all for today. So doing this episode has just, I don't know, helped kind of get me back into the groove. So I definitely want to get another one in maybe by the end of the week or early mid next week. So I will talk to you then, guys. Keep at it. Stay hungry. Message, you know, people that you want to work for. Just give it a chance. Shoot your shot. You know, get on Twitter, DM, LinkedIn, DM. And see what you guys can do. So until next time, I'll see you in the next episode.